Release the horses. Bring them in now, please, Sean. Thank you. There she is. There's the teeny tiny lady waving, smiling and waving. Both horses coming in now. It's amazing how you're able to get them to come in on cue. What do you have, a certain sign, or how do you do that? Is it working with them at home in your apartment?
Yeah, it's kind of tight because they're two big horses, and I have just like a one-bedroom apartment. Plus, I live with a cat. And I practice at home. I sort of open the front door.
Yeah.
And then I have a sign that says, come here, baby.
Yeah.
And then the horses read. They can read.
Yes, of course. Like, you wouldn't want somebody else to read that sign and then come into that place, would you?
I don't need no ignorant horse.
Where are you going?
You see the earth from space. It changes you. It changes your relationship with this planet, with humanity.
Okay.
I really want you to come with me. Would you?
Well, the answer is no.
It's an adventure.
I do not want an adventure now.
It's a big deal for me.
It is no big deal.
Very big deal diving in. Teeny Tiny getting ahead of us there, getting a chance to talk to Jeff Bezos about flying 60 miles into outer space. I've got to give the guy credit, Tom. Chance of dying, pretty high, right? Coming back in.
That's somebody, Sherry and I talked about that yesterday. We didn't get into the mortality risk, but it's the first time that crewed his rocket will be crewed, and he and his darn brother and some rich guy who wins an auction are going to be the three suckers.
Going into outer space, Tom.
Risky. Yeah, for 10 minutes, it's going to be weightless for two and then plunge back to Earth. The biggest physical requirement needed, they said, you have to be able to not have to go to the bathroom for 90 minutes.
Could be hard for most men over 55.
I wonder.
Well, Jeff Bezos teaches everybody at Amazon how to urinate in a bottle, so it shouldn't be
that
hard.
That's right.
All right.
I didn't realize it was astronaut training.
Try the veal. I'll be here all week. All right. Alaska Airlines, my favorite airlines of all airlines. Yes, I am an MVP gold. just what can I
humble
say?
Humble brag.
Yeah. What you want to go into the lounge? Yes, I'm allowed. All right. Wear your mask, though. A couple of people are upset. I don't think so. A couple of people are upset with them because they don't want to have to wear a certain uniform. Alaska Airlines has the male uniform, the female uniform, how men are supposed to wear their hair, a number of earrings and stuff like that. The women have their own uniform as well. Alaska Airlines has had this, and a couple of people have brought the ACLU in on it and saying, hey, you know what? I'm non-binary. I don't want to be forced to wear a particular uniform because I don't want to be misgendered. Is it what it is? Misgendered? I don't want to have somebody call me a male when actually I'm a female or whatever the person is that day. So where is the case at this point? Have they changed?
Well, so the ACLU, they first have to allege that this outrage is going on, and eventually it can lead to a lawsuit. They've written Alaska Airlines. So just to kind of explain, a non-binary worker does not feel comfortable with the male uniform and the female uniform. Now, they feel like there needs to be something that, and there are, the grooming standards come with each. And they feel like by forcing them into one of what they consider rigid gender stereotypes, that it's going against their, you know, against their own personal grain, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
Now, Alaska Airlines they consider themselves very LGBTQ positive, and they claim that they have worked with all of their workers as much as possible to kind of determine what standards should work and not work in the workplace. And they say, we have adapted our grooming standards and all, and they say now that you can wear, unless you're serving food, you can wear your hair down, whether you're a man or a woman or however you are feeling. And they also say that, yes, they do have a man's uniform and a women's uniform, but they do not require their workers to wear only one or the other. So I would assume they're presenting their position as, we are happy to work with non-binary people to see what's up. And it seems to me that if you're willing to have this person one day wants to wear a women's uniform and one day wants to wear a man's uniform, it sounds like Alaska's okay with that. So I don't know. I'm not quite sure what more you know, is going to be requested at this point if they're willing to go back and forth. This seems, after reading this, it feels like this is something that can be worked out.
Yes.
The one particular individual has said that Justin has been refused the opportunity to meet and discuss flight attendant standards with executive management. Mm-hmm. According to Alaska, they say, we have been working, maybe not specifically with Justin, but with other representatives of the union or the workers. So this does seem like it's something that could be resolved.
I was talking to a friend of mine who's a captain of an airlines, and he made the announcement, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to just let you know where we are, blah, blah, blah. We're going to be, you know, made up. We lost a couple of minutes. We're going to try to make it up as we go. We'll keep you posted, and we'll get you on the gate. If those of you have a tight connection, we'll let you know. Got to get you there as soon as we possibly can. Somebody comes up, complains to the flight attendant, and then wants to complain to the pilot friend of mine, and the person then unloads on the pilot, letting them know how deeply offended they were by the use of the term ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, what is the alternative then? People, listen up, people.
I had to do an intro at an event in Seattle, and they made me say donors and supporters of the nonprofit. That's, you had to say the name.
Oh,
so
okay.
It would be, yeah, you know, patrons, because deeply offensive is to say, ladies mm-hmm. and gentlemen, mm-hmm. in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And this person, by the way, wasn't somebody that claimed to be binary or non-binary or fluid. They were just, they were expressing that they were offended for anyone that might be non gender specific. So that's, they themselves are so sensitive that they told the pilot that he should watch what he says. It's weird that the person actually referred to him as a he, but yeah, that's very, very, very insensitive of people to use the term ladies and gentlemen. So that's letting you know where we are in the world. Good for ACLU. They're stepping in on this one. By the way, they were at one point, the ACLU started in, I think, more than 100 years ago. They just simply said, listen, when it comes to the First Amendment and the Fifth, the Sixth, when it comes to your rights not to have the government intrude either into your freedom of thought or speech, or they can't come into your house and start looking around without proper warrant, really protecting and holding the government too. If you want to have the Constitution, you want to have the Bill of Rights, fine. Then we're going to be the people that are always the one telling you, you've overstepped the bounds, we're coming after you. They were the ones that was, what's the name of it? Where was it? In
Skokie,
Ohio?
Illinois.
Skokie, yeah. Illinois. And a bunch of guys wanted to march around. I think it was like 18 of them. They're part of the KKK. And I think Skokie, Illinois said, no, we're not going to have that. ACLU stepped in and said, nope, perfectly able and legal. They're allowed. Go ahead. Fought them, took them to court. And Skokie, Illinois said, all right, fine. Go ahead and have your stupid parade. And down the middle of whatever that street was, these morons marched around with their white capes on and their white hoods on. And it was the ACLU said, if you're going to have a First Amendment, it extends to this as well.
Yeah, I was thinking they were Nazi sympathizers.
Nazis? They were Nazis. You're right.
And they were going through a Jewish neighborhood.
Yes.
And the ACLU came to their defense, and I think the lead attorney or the head of the ACLU at the time happened to be Jewish. So it was a very, very potent statement about the priority of first speech, you know, free speech above all else.
Yes.
And that is how, I mean, the ACLU, the great thing, at least through my lifetime, the great thing about the ACLU was that half the time liberals loved him and half the time conservatives loved them, because it was like whichever side of the ledger they, but they were always true blue to this idea that, you know, speech is like sacred. So you can say whatever you want, no matter how awful it might be to even the ACLU people, you have the right to say that. Sort of like the Patrick Henry, I'll fight to the death. You know, I may think you're whatever Patrick Henry eloquently said.
I might not
said
like
about,
what you said, but I will fight to the death to allow you to say it.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking the ACLU did the KKK thing that was in Illinois, outside of Chicago. But let's get to the other story is that the ACLU really has sort of left what the ACL used to stand for, because now they realize, hey, look at how much money we can make if we fight against Donald Trump.
Well, yes. This is a fantastic article. I know. Usually, John, our conversations are so rich that if you hear us talk about an issue, you don't need any more research. Yeah. But I would highly recommend the New York Times analysis of the history of the ACLU called "Once a Bastion of Free Speech, the ACLU Faces an Identity Crisis." And one of the interesting things they said is they have never been financially better off than they were during the Donald Trump years. That Donald Trump, in some ways, caused more people to join the ACLU, pay membership fees, and donate to the ACLU than ever. And as a result, they have been able to hire more lawyers and more attorneys to fight the good fight. But what they've also noticed is
for free speech or the good fight for the new ACLU?
Yes, well, supposedly both. But what they've decided is that the ACLU, because they've hired so many new people, that they're not content with just staying with the free speech argument. Mm-hmm. That they say there are other factors. Excuse me, I'm getting all choked up here.
Just thinking about it, what they used to be. By the way, as Tom Coughs, they used to do $5 million a year. In 15 months, they raised $120 million. Because what it was is they had the people that are on the board of the ACLU now hated Donald Trump. They probably still hate Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And then they realized, hey, we hit a gold mine here. Let's just go after Donald Trump. Let's refer to him as a fascist. Let's fight Donald Trump on every single front, regardless of First Amendment or anything else. And then they realized, look at this. Look at all the money we're making. The former director of the ACLU, who had the job for like 30-some years, said they have lost their way, and he hopes a new organization comes in and picks up the mantle of the old ACLU.
Yes, and I think what I find fascinating about this article, because basically they say that there's more to the importance of American Constitution than just free speech, and that you ought to take in other factors, and that had never been sort of the true blue line of the ACLU, was always free speech no matter what, and they say you should take other things into consideration. And they say the thing that really created the crisis within ACLU was that they went to bat to allow for the white supremacists to have their march through Charlottesville, Virginia, and that shook up so many people within the ACLU. They said, you know, maybe we ought to, calculate and balance the free speech version of our allegiance to the Constitution versus everything else that led to. And so this is, to me, and the reason I think this is such a compelling argument, because I think it's classic to all sorts of different situations. It's, for instance, you believe in democracy to such a point that would you be willing to put democracy at risk if you democratically elected anti-democratic leaders? I think it's practically a cliche. I think that Hitler, you know, in the early 30s was voted into office. And I remember when we had the Arab Spring in Egypt, when the Muslim Brotherhood ended up winning a democratically elected, president, that they then started moving toward anti-democratic processes. Is it worth defending democracy by allowing anti-democratic forces to partake? And if the anti-democratic forces, win the day, and then they destroy democracy, is that worth it? And I think that's sort of what they're doing. If you allow for free speech that ends up being against free speech, and that ends up denying free speech to anyone, is there a philosophical calculation that you have to make? It's such a rich
snake eating
territory.
Snake eating its own tail in the sense that they're defending free speech, but the speech that they defend then causes free speech to go away.
Yes.
So that's the dilemma. Right. So that's the dilemma. It becomes this very, very tight circle. So, like, for instance, if someone like Charles Murray were speaking at a college and he gets up on stage to speak freely because it's America and he's going to say some words, but as he starts to speak, the students stand up and scream at him and force him off stage and then assault him as he's leaving. Well, the students feel it was so important for us to scream over you and to assault you, Charles Murray, because what you were going to say, the words themselves were so hurtful and the words themselves are violent that we have to stop you from speaking. So now a small group of people with the heckler's veto stop speech and thought from being heard because this group of people has determined that what you are saying is far too upsetting. So therefore, will yell at you and stop people like Charles Murray or anybody else that has a counter position to what the new sort of woke, politically correct garbage that's spewed out at a regular basis that the ACLU does not protect. Charles Murray does not protect others. Ben Shapiro does not protect other people that are saying things that might not be part of the new woke PC garbage world. So where's the ACLU to protect those people that are speaking ways or to protect books to be written or ideas to be expressed? Why are they not protecting those
things? But it doesn't need to be specifically the left versus the right in this. I mean, it could be the right is the one that's not allowing for left
People to attack. When was the last time right people screamed down somebody standing on stage?
Well, give me some examples.
When was the last time right people stopped books from being published?
In the 50s.
Let's go back to the 50s.
It rises above that level. And so the question is, is free speech, because there are still, ACLU has been defending the free speech argument in a lot of cases. The article mentioned some involving Cuomo and the NRA. They supported the NRA, right to, whatever. I forget what the free speech thing is. I can look it up in the article if you want. But so the point isn't whether they lean right or left. The point is, are there things that are more important than free speech that rise above or equal free speech? No. Well, John, but you were just saying, if free speech allows for anti-free speech that kills free speech, then where are you? You were so true to your principles that you ended up eviscerating your very principles.
That's
the tricky side.
You should be able to say what you want. You should be able to say what you want. Listen, and it doesn't stop somebody from getting upset, right? You can say what you want. Yeah. You can protect it to say what you want. The government can't stop you, or the government can if they get in cahoots with social media. But the government can't stop you from expressing. Now, they can't protect you from somebody getting mad at you and being upset with you. But then the government steps back in again and says, excuse me, you can't pick up a club and hit that person over the head because they've said something that's upset you, right?
That's right.
So there's protections all around. But we live in a world where all of a sudden you can't express an idea. You say something on Cairo Radio and they suspend you, or if somebody wants to get you fired. That's not a world that somebody wants to live in, is it?
It's a much bigger issue, I think, than that, John. I think it's a philosophical one. If the very grounds upon which you are defending something are going to create the lack of that, is that something that you should take into balance? I'm not saying you should, or I'm not taking a side in this, but that's the risk. That's the danger.
Right. It was finally, I forget who was that stood up against McCarthy and said,
Secretary of the Army.
This is
Joe
ridiculous.
Welch.
You have no. Yes, you. This is ridiculous. You have no proof of this. And finally, somebody said, "This is nonsense." And
you, sir, have no shame.
There
have
you go.
No shame. Yes.
Right. By the way, horrible movie with George Clooney in that. What was that when they did the remake of Good Day, Good Night, and Good Luck, or whatever that thing was?
That's a fantastic movie.
Oh my God! Couldn't just
with Edward R. Murrow. Black and white. Genius.
Yes. Oh, genius, yeah. George Clooney. All right, Tracy Taylor looking at traffic. It's Bucky's Auto Service Centers. They've got 16 locations. They've been around for 51 years. They know a thing or two about your car. They'll fix it for you. That's Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Take your car there. Push it in there. Drive it in there. Take parts of it in there and pile it up in the corner. They'll put it back together for you. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I don't think I've ever sold that. All right. They were supposed to do a January 6th commission. Got blocked in the Senate. They said, no, we're not going to do that. I realized that there was this other group working on this thing to figure out what happened on January 6th, and they've come forward with what they have discovered, Tom. Anything in particular? I got a little bit of sound. Hang on.
Yeah, this is the Senate had two committees working on this, Homeland Security and one of, I forget what the second one was. Anyway, they've now come up with sort of a bipartisan. I think the most significant thing about what happened and why did it happen the way it happened. And what's the most striking thing about this is that there is bipartisan effort at looking at this. They were very clear to steer clear of the factors that might have caused it, like Donald Trump, that's there's a dispute. Republicans don't want to talk about it. Democrats do. But in general, just on a Capitol Police blow-by-blow account, why did this happen, and could it have been prevented, and what can we do in the future to prevent it? Okay, now CBS, we have
what was the most surprising breakdown or failure that you learned about through this investigation?
The intelligence failure. How long it took the Defense Department to respond.
The Capitol Hill police were not prepared in any sense.
Sadly, it was the frontline officers who were left to defend us, to defend our staff, and to defend democracy.
In a rare bipartisan joint interview, the Democrats and Republicans leading a Senate investigation sat down for a candid conversation about what went wrong allowing a mob to storm the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Their report out this morning found warning signs were missed by federal law enforcement and Capitol Police.
Part of the reason it was overlooked is people were saying, well, this just can't happen. These groups of folks, they can't do that. Well, now we know they can. We know that what happens on the Internet can be translated into physical action on the Capitol grounds or in towns across this country. We've got to treat domestic terrorism with the seriousness that it deserves.
These police officers were put, as I said, in an impossible position.
Right.
They didn't have adequate training. They didn't have adequate equipment. They didn't have adequate barriers. They didn't have adequate communication. They didn't have the intelligence to know what was coming. And yet they valiantly supported the effort to protect the Capitol, protecting the vice president, protecting all the members of Congress, protecting democracy.
Oh, God. Please.
What do you mean,
please? A
bunch
of morons. What, 800 people went in there and took selfies and ran around? They didn't whether they light anything on fire.
The thing. Because they were stopped, we don't know how extreme it would have gotten. Yeah.
Stopped. What do you mean stopped? They ran around, took a bunch of pictures. You're wandering around, high-fiving one another. They go down there on the floor, and somebody makes some ridiculous prayer, and then someone breaks into Nancy Pelosi's office, gets a picture in there. Really? They have any idea, if you talk to any one of them about, like, oh, explain to me what they're doing today, what they're voting for, what is this? Hey, the three branches of the federal government.
Okay.
And you name two of the Supreme Court. It was a bunch of morons that were like, hey, you going in? I'll go in. And now they ran around.
Some of those morons might have been Seattle police, and I know how you have a blue light in your heart, so be careful here.
Do we know if they were Seattle police?
A lot of those people think of themselves. A lot of those people think of themselves as patriots. That's the language they used, encouraged by various political forces. Yeah. And we don't know because you know that the one woman that was shot by the Capitol Police, Ashley Babbitt, I think, something. Mm-hmm. Well, that was where the reason that was like the red line, because that is where a lot of the Congress men and women were hiding. The fact that they had a Spirit Pence away, they're shouting hang Mike Pence. Would they really have hanged Mike Pence? We don't know. But the thing is, one of the scary things about mobs, and this is true, not on just on the right, obviously on the left, any kind of mob is you don't know. The mob can get carried away and do things that individuals would never have even dreamed of doing. And that was what was bad about this. But John, we ought to celebrate the fact that you've got Rob Portman and Blunt from the Republicans sharing this with Gary Peters and Klobuchar, that Democrats and Republicans got together. And at least on this, they tend to agree. They don't want to have a commission. They don't want to look into whether Donald Trump had anything to do with this, how he contributed to it or not. But at least on this, that Capitol Police didn't take it seriously enough. And they are one of the suggestions. There are 20 suggestions. One of the suggestions is that we beef up the Capitol Hill security because we need to be better prepared for this if this happens.
The other part of it had come out of it when they defended Lafayette Square during the Antifa Black Lives Matter riots. They said, well, we came in with helicopters, well, whatever it was. Oh, a police will protest where they set
Lafayette Square. And that's a little different, but go ahead. I'll finish this.
Well, the peaceful protest where they set stuff on fire, like the church. They came in with the helicopters and the explosions and gas and tear gas. And they said, wow, that really looked bad. Now that we look back on it, why don't we do this? Let's pull back, let's depolice, so they didn't have as many people, even though they had known for about 2 weeks, not on Twitter, although Twitter was shut, they were shut down on Twitter. It was mostly on Facebook. They were planning this kind of thing, and they had seen it, they had heard about it, but they didn't beef up. they said we're going to hold back, and they didn't have the same force that they would have had in place as they had originally. Here are a bunch of recommendations.
The Senate Rules Committee and the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee jointly made 20 recommendations, including appointing a new Capitol Police Chief, bolstering training, enhancing communication between law enforcement agencies, improving coordination across federal, state, and local governments, and evaluating threats of violence on social media. Most of the changes, the senators believe, can be adopted immediately, marking a rare moment of agreement in a very divided Congress.
We believe that our duty was not just to say, oh, what a mess this was, and we disagree.
Part of the message here is that we can figure this out together.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard. You didn't have enough policemen out there.
Yeah, the thing is, it's interesting, you raised the Lafayette Square thing. That was the famous... they cleared the square when they weren't protesting.
Trump to go over the Bible.
Yes, that's when it happened. And so generals, you know, they always say generals, the problem with generals is they're always fighting the last war. Because they realized that they overreacted to the Lafayette Square clearing for Donald Trump, they underreacted then to the onslaught on January 6th.
Yes.
Human nature.
By the way, the Babbitt family, Ashley Babbitt's family, is suing because they want to find out who was it that killed her. They're not allowed. They're not allowed to know that. That's the sort of the rule that you're protected. So the guy that fired the gun at her, apparently we will never know. We'll never know who it was.
Until it's leaked.
Which I don't know if they're going to be leaking it, but that guy's identity is protected. All right, Tracy Taylor looking at traffic for us.
Change the station.
How quiet. Sorry I had to hear that, Tom. The little kid I ran into is big not fan of the show.
I think I like Tom better.
And that was when I said, you know what, I'm stopping. I'm not talking to you anymore. All right, here comes the mailman with the... There's the mailman. There he is. Look at him.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
It's boring, and it's two men laughing at their own jokes.
There we go. That's how we describe the show. We'll get to Titty
Tiny
Lady. She
must be a regular listener.
Her mother is. Jill is. We'll get to all the letters, letter of the day, but first let's take care of all the rest. Here we go. Tom?
Okay, we kicked off the show with the vaccine lottery that's happening today, and we'll find out tomorrow who won. Area code 360. So, I get calls and emails all the time saying I've won money. Is there a secure website or number to call to confirm the rando voicemail?
Oh, this is going to be good. 360, I don't want my tax dollars going to people like Tom. They need to pave my roads.
And area code 253. John, if you were able to use your platform to help stop a virus from spreading and mutating, would you?
Oh, absolutely. Lisa in Bremerton says, hey, guys, it's me, blind Lisa in Bremerton. I had COVID at the beginning of May, 2 weeks, kicked my you-know-what. I pray for those who are going through it now, including Chris Sullivan, but I'm not getting no vaccine. End of conversation. That's from blind Lisa in Bremerton.
And Amy in Ording writes in, I got the first shot 3 weeks ago to shut my husband up. I'm due to get the second shot today. I'm choosing not to get the second shot. This lottery played a large role in that decision.
Ooh, wow.
Interestingly
weird.
Enough, though, she gets the best of both worlds in the way she's thinking, because she is included. If you have one shot under your belt, you're included in the lottery.
Mm-hmm. And she has a quiet husband now. When it comes to sticky baseballs, I went to Rogers High School in Puyallup and played against Brock Huard and the Vikings homecoming. A group of our linemen had sprayed their jerseys with Pam. I sacked the heck out of him, and it was the greatest moment of my fourth-string football career.
Oh, we got to send that on to Brock. That's great. Area code 253, again, on the sticky baseballs business. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with legalizing steroids and baseball. I think if you do that, you are skirting the line between sports and sports entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Eviction regulation 360. Is some of the federal relief money going to the landlords to recoup due rent? I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, supposedly it's for landlords and tenants. Area code 206. So, John, you're saying all these people are going to ruin their credit and rental history for years to avoid rent for 6 months?
They don't think like that. Is housing a human right? Then property taxes should be a human rights violation.
That's good. Area code 206. Don't feel bad for the poor owner who's selling her rentals and moving out of state. That's just good business. Sell the rental houses, over asking price, average house worth $500,000 on the low side. The person will probably be able to triple the rental units she has. Of course, rent will be significantly lower than what they were asking here. Don't get me wrong, I'm on the side of the owner, but the person selling will make out like a bandit the way Seattle real estate is.
360, I think the news is Hannah's party. More, please. Yo, absolutely.
That's all right.
Teeny, what do you think?
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Ah, letter of the day. Thank you, Teeny.
Letter of the day comes from area code 253. Uh-huh. Boy, howdy. You know, it's one thing to listen live, but to immediately follow that up with a podcast? That, Dory. And I think I couldn't possibly be more outraged. I miss anything on the Tom and Curly Show today? Right, probably not. Okay, back to my man, Monson.
Mom, change the station.
Too late. We've already done the show. We'll do another hour, though, for you.
That's right. Wait, they have not.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write Darn no you, more. Dory.
Didn't write no more.
She left the gloom a-hanging round my front door.